You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back if you're rejoining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got a fine guest co-host with me. He's sticking around for the second hour of this program. His name's Jim Santel, former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. Jim and I are extremely pleased to be joined this half hour by Sean Fetteplace with the Main Street Alliance, as well as Mitch Prejbanu. Mitch is a small business owner. He owns one of the places that it has been on my list to get to up my jewelry game. I am so excited to come into Paul's Jewelers in West Allis, just a hop, skip, and a jump from my home, and check out the amazing things that Mitch has got in his store. They're here to talk about the impacts of tariffs on small businesses. Sean, let's start with you. I've been talking about this a lot because what I have observed is the following. Businesses like Apple, big, huge mega corporations, are able to effectively curry favor with, either by explicit payoff or other bending of the knee, are able to create exemptions to some of the tariff policies in ways that small business owners simply are not. Secondly, as an economist, when I think about the impact of tariffs, even if it was a cogent, sustained policy of tariffs on a small business owner, the margins are smaller. There are less options for suppliers because small business owners don't have the bargaining power that, say, a Walmart does. And so small businesses in any rising tariff environment will always, always be at a competitive disadvantage to mega businesses. Sean, are these real concerns? What else should people know about the vulnerability, the unique vulnerability of smaller businesses? And folks, we're not talking about businesses that are clearing 30, 40, 50 mil in gross. We're talking about smaller businesses like Mr. Prejbanu's of Paul's Jeweler in West Allis. Are we getting the basic economics of what's going on here and the vulnerabilities of small businesses right? Tell us more.
Yeah, so I would say, first off, thanks for having us on. Second, that's true. The margins that many small businesses have are in the single digits. In fact, the majority are. And if you look at the, you know, obviously on the China tariffs, you had 145%. They ratcheted that back down. But you have still, you know, the business model, basically, folks have a couple of months in some cases, to have this change. And if not, they're going to go out of business. And there are millions of businesses that are on precipice across the country. 30% is still very high. And by the way, tariffs are stackable, and there's still tariffs left from the first Trump administration. And so in many cases, the actual tariff rate, even at the quote reduced rate, is closer to 50%. In many cases. And so it's being undersold by, I think, frankly, the media hasn't covered this particularly well, but so having our elected officials bringing that up. So it really, for a lot of folks I'm hearing from, it's not a matter of if, but when they would have to wait, they would fail unless these tariffs come off in the next few months.
Mr. Prejbanu, let me turn to you again. We've got Mitch Prejbanu with Sean, Jim Santel, and myself this afternoon. He's the owner of Paul's Jewelers in West Allis. How have, as a small business owner to date, has this impacted your business?
Yes, it has, in a couple of different ways. Before the tariffs were ever announced, I was negotiating with a company in China to get new displays for my store, and the order was already ready to go. I had gotten the sample. And then all of a sudden, the 145% tariff was announced. So that was off the table, even though the company wasn't passing it on to us altogether. But it just made it a lot more expensive. And in the first place, these, you know, the companies overseas, they have a competitive advantage to the companies here that they have stopped making jewelry displays and boxes. So I'm a free trader. You know, I have a degree in economics. So just let them compete, you know, equal footing. across the board. That's my take on it.
Sean,
on the other hand, we also manufacture jewelry right here in West Dallas in our shop, so it kind of works to our advantage. You know, because we can tell people that we make it here, we're not affected by the tariffs, but we really are. All the materials that we buy, everybody's affected by it, you know, including the steel and aluminum. You know, there's no way around not being affected by it.
Mitch, Sean, this is Jim. Thanks so much for being on Maggie's show today. I want to follow up on a point that you made just a moment or so, Sean, which is this notion of the precipice, the vulnerability. You talked about the fact that, and I think about industries that again, large ones and small ones, small businesses. You think about shops down the street and in your locality, and almost overnight, they're sometimes gone. And you think, how is that possible? And I think you put your finger on it when you said that in a couple of months, things can change so dramatically that can bring a small business to its end. Tell us more about that and the dynamics on that particular economic issue, this notion that you're vulnerable, and it's not just moving things over the period of years and years changing economic principles. It's things that have an impact literally weeks after decisions are made. Tell us more about that, Sean or Mitch.
If I can, Sean, let me just specify this. Specifically, the volatility in the Trump tariff terror, meaning it's on again, it's on one day, it's off one day. The levels are changing. They added the 50% steel tariffs over the weekend. We had these across the board tariffs, and the layering, the stacking of these different types of tariffs. The fact that from one day to the next, a small business owner might not know how much their inputs cost to create their finished product. How disruptive is this for small business owners, Sean?
It's incredibly disruptive. And the thing that's important to know is that it takes time for product to get from whether it's China or Europe, wherever, to the US. And you pay the tariff at the point of entry. And so not knowing what the tariff rate is going to be is incredibly, makes it impossible to make decisions. And so as a result of that, you have folks that are making risky bets. For example, Beth Beneke, who's a member in Minnesota, she had to, like, as soon as the reduction happened, she immediately hit send on having stuff get over here. Just because the administration says this is a 90-day pause, I mean, we all know, I really don't want to use the taco phrase, the Trump always chickens out thing, because I think it just antagonizes him. I didn't want him to change behavior on this. But, you know, you never know what's going to happen. And so that makes it very difficult. I would say, to your point, as far as the capital inflows, a lot of business owners, I mean, they take out, in some cases, you have to take out loans for your business. And many guarantee it against their homes, because that's their largest asset. And so you have a lot of folks where if they're not able to be profitable, and over time they spend down their assets and their capital, they're at risk of not only losing their business, but also potentially losing their home. And many of these folks are of the age where they have kids, right? So that's, I think, really what we're talking about here, is that you can have a successful, profitable business and make it an okay and good life for yourself. But if all of a sudden your costs get jacked up by 30 or 50%, it makes it very difficult.
Mitch, let me ask you a question. Jewelry, a luxury good. This is not the first expenditure out of a household budget. It's what people do with disposable income. And so businesses that rely on American and, in our case, Wisconsin consumers having meaningful disposable income to buy goods that are not essential. It's not housing. It's not medical care. It's not transportation. It's not education, those sorts of things. Have you seen customer behavior change at all? What are you hearing from the folks that come into your store about their confidence level in the U.S. economy? West Dallas, I think, is a great place, and a business in West Dallas, a great place to ask this question, because you got conservatives, you got Democrats, you got folks that don't care one whit about politics as long as their groceries get cheaper and life gets better for them. What are you hearing from your customers, Mitch?
Exactly. We had a retirement sale for the previous owner. We just finished it. It went out went on the whole month of May, and we didn't hit the numbers that we were expecting. We advertised, we did all the right things, we hired the company, and people just weren't coming in. You know, some of them called and they say, hey, I wish I could come, but they just couldn't come in because it is, you know, disposable income, and they're just not buying new pieces of jewelry. So they opt to repair their old ones. So, or they come and they sell us the jewelry because,
yes,
you know, tariffs are inflationary. So the price of gold has skyrocketed. You know, we'll take that piece of jewelry and, you know, we'll either turn it into something new or, you know, we give them credit for them. So that's how they get by. That's how we get by as well.
Mitch, let me ask you a question, because I think looking at small business owners like yourself and your year-over-year comparisons, you just told us you ran a huge promotion, you had advertising, you wanted to drive customers into your store, and you saw actually a decrease in the foot traffic. It wasn't what you thought it was going to be. You did all this, and it's not creating customer engagement and excitement. I'm hearing from, on the text line, I'm hearing from one of my favorite conservative texters, saying things are just fine. Core inflation is down. People don't like Democrats. The stock market's doing just fine. Mitch, even accepting that everything that the band just said on the text line is true, which it's not,
yeah,
is it your experience that customers and the regular folks that come into your store feel confident about the economy and where it's going right now?
No, they don't. It's the uncertainty of what's coming. Nobody knows. I don't think Trump and his administration know where this is going, you know, because it's just made up stuff. They, you know, whatever they feel like that morning. So, no, no confidence.
So, Conservative Bob on the text line, that's not me talking. That's small business owner Mitch Prejbanu, who owns Paul's Jeweler here in West Dallas, a community with a very diverse political demographic there. People do not feel confident about this economy. I think the most generous thing you could possibly say here is people didn't feel very confident about the economy as Joe Biden was finishing his presidency. They don't feel any more confident now than they did then. That means regular Americans are afraid for their future. We're going to talk more with Sean Fettelplace of the Main Street Alliance, as well as Mitch Prejbanu, small business owner in West Dallas, about what this means for your family and small businesses across the state of Wisconsin as Trump's tariff terror, as tipsy-turvy as it is, continues as we continue this fine discussion right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You got a question or comment? 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got Jim Santel sticking around for the whole show with me. I love it when he does. He's the former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. We've got two fine guests with us for this half hour. Sean Fettelplace of the Main Street Alliance and small business owner Mitch Prejbanu. He owns Paul's Jewelers in West Dallas. I will be making sure to stop by. I like some sparkly things myself. Jim had a question for you, gentlemen. We've been talking about the impact of Donald Trump's tariffs on small businesses, but it goes beyond the impacts, the uncertainties that will plague small business owners as their input costs rise. Tariffs are inflationary. It pushes costs up. They are effectively a tax. So yes, it will hurt small businesses. But we need to view this not just as one small business, one small business, one small business. If we want small businesses on Main Street in places like West Dallas or Richland Center or Rhinelander, go Hodags, we need to think about this as the impact on small businesses together and the impact of those small businesses in turn on communities. With that, Jim.
as a community, Paul, Mitch, when you think about your business there in West Dallas, what are you hearing from other small businesses there? Are they also concerned about not just their own business, but the overall community, the overall atmosphere, the economic sense, frankly, even the cultural sense of the community itself?
So I have our repair and manufacturing business. We work with other jewelers around the city, around Wisconsin and the United States now. And everybody tells me that they're down. You know, it just doesn't feel right, you know, their customers, you know, except for coming in and selling their old gold jewelry, it doesn't feel right, you know. Nobody has the confidence to go ahead and get big purchases. So,
well, and I think there is that moment where people have this collective unease, whether you're a small business owner or a customer that patronizes small business, that collective unease, I simply don't see any reason, Sean, when I look at the way in which Donald Trump manages or fails to manage economics and economic policy in this country. I don't see any reason for people to not be ill at ease. He literally changes up the script every other day. We know that there have been shouting matches in the Oval Office between Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, and others within the administration about tariffs. There is a huge contingent of people within the White House that know tariffs used at this level, across the board tariffs that are not targeted, that are not about specifically promoting U.S.-based businesses and competition writ large, that people oppose these. And yet Donald Trump continues down this I don't know, plank walk, you know, with what end inside? Like, I don't get how we get out of it. So my question to you, Sean, is, what's the next step? What do people need to do if they're concerned about businesses like Paul's Jewelers in West Dallas, if they care about small business owners, if they work for small business owners, if they are a small business owner, what should people do?
Yeah, they should go to our website, to MainStreetAlliance.org, and contact their lawmakers to support the Small Business Liberation Act. It is legislation that would exempt small businesses from the tariffs. It already was introduced in the Senate by Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts, and we've been working really hard to get it a vote. And there's going to be a House companion bill being introduced soon as well. So there's two tracks to this. There's like the political track, which is, you know, the court of public opinion. But then there's also the court case that's moving forward. And there was some good news from the trade court in New York, where they a panel of three judges, one Trump appointed, one yep. Obama appointed, and one George W. Bush appointed. Reagan. They struck down the tariffs as being illegal. And there's an appeals court that's hearing it right now. We're cautiously optimistic that they're going to also side with the plaintiffs. And I have to say, this is one of the few issues in the course of my entire career where I've agreed with Rand Paul and the Cato Institute. And there's a lot of, there's folks like Elizabeth Warren were with us on this, and there's people like Rand Paul. This is one of the very few issues where they both agree. So that's
Rand Paul, Cato Institute, the American Enterprise Institute. I'm like, oh my goodness.
Strange bedfellows, right?
Look at who I agree with here. Sean, let me ask you this question. We've got the big, brutal bill, which is also now being contemplated in the Senate. We will see small businesses go under because of this haphazard tariff tax policy that makes no freaking sense from a macro or microeconomic perspective. And the big brutal bill will make people sicker. They'll have less access to life-saving health care. They'll have less access to emergency food assistance. We know that Medicare costs will go up, et cetera, et cetera. The 1-2 punch on middle-class Americans that are coming from this terror, from the tariffs and the terror of the big brutal bill, is acute and it is real. Can you tell us a little bit more? We've got about a minute left.
Yeah, so under the bill, 15 million people will lose their health care. And we've done a survey of our members. Over half of our membership either gets their health insurance through the marketplace, which is going to become considerably more expensive because of the bill, or they get their insurance through Medicaid. And so that's One Impact, SNAP being cut. A lot of our members take SNAP because they have grocery stores. And, you know, it also blows up the deficit and the debt just to give tax cuts to the very wealthy. This bill is not good for small business. It's bad for small business. And we're working really hard to make changes. And if they don't make changes, to defeat it from ever making it to the president.
Call your legislators, call your congresspeople, call your senators and tell them we need small businesses and the tariff terror ain't getting it done. Thank you to Mitch Prejbanu of Paul's Jewelers in West Dallas and Sean Fetteplace of the Main Street Alliance. Jim Santel stays with me on the other side. I'm going to tell you how you can tell they're running a con. You just have to know where to look and to put the pieces together. We discuss next. I can tell you the secret to seeing the con right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. Welcome back, everybody. So how do you know you're getting conned by a politician? It's a good question, and I don't care like what party you more typically align with. How do you know you're getting conned by a politician? I actually think that there are some pretty frequent indicia of the political con, if
there are
you
some
will.
Signs out there, right? And yes, we know what they are, right, Maggie?
There are some consistent symptoms. So I'm going to kind of walk up to this in a way, and maybe, Jim, we'll do this in almost game show-like fashion.
Good. We like game shows.
I won't tell you what the factor is, but I'll give you the
excellent.
The exemplar of the factor, and good, we'll see how we suss this out. Folks, if you want to suggest a factor for how do you know that a politician is conning you, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. How do you know the con is on? So here's the first thing. I'm going to use this as an example. Jacob, this is going to be the AOC exchange with this Republican lawyer for a congressional committee. They're talking about Medicaid. I think this is fascinating. And let's just take a listen. I'm not going to tell you what my takeaway is, but let's take a listen together. This is AOC questioning the Republican lawyer for a congressional committee about cuts to Medicaid. Check it out.
If a woman miscarries, she would then be kicked off the exemption, correct?
The exemption also includes postpartum coverage.
Postpartum, miscarriage. Is miscarriage covered under that?
If a state includes miscarriage under postpartum coverage, then yes.
Federally, in this statute, is miscarriage explicitly included in the language of the text?
The bill includes postpartum coverage as an exemption.
Miscarriage is not listed, correct?
If a miscarriage by a state is included in postpartum coverage, then yes.
Is the text, is miscarriage explicitly included in the text of the bill?
It is not explicitly stated in the text.
Thank you very much. I think this is tremendously important for my colleagues to understand because President Trump nominated anti-abortion, anti-choice Supreme Court justices that now, because of the Dobbs ruling, have forced women to carry, not just carry out miscarriages, traumatic miscarriages, which can be debilitating, life-threatening, and then on top of it, could potentially endanger their insurance status. Sit with that.
Okay, so that's element one. To how do you know that the con is on? How do you know that a politician is conning you? Okay. And I want Republicans and Dems and whatever your flavor is, 855-752-4842. And it is not an acceptable response. Keith from Broadhead, I love you, man. Thank you for listening and engaging on the text line. It is not an acceptable response to say their lips are moving because the whataboutism, the false equivalency is a problem. Can we say both sides have had politicians that have lied? Sure. But here is the thing. I have a rubric for this, a handy acronym so that you can get down a level. It is LIAR, L-I-A-R. Is it a lie? That's thing one. Or is it an exaggeration or something else? Is it a rhetorical flourish? But is it actually a lie? That's thing one. Thing two, I. What is the intended purpose of the lie? Why are they lying and to what end? A of liar is what is the acuity of the lie? What's the level of the lie? And then finally, R, what is the result of the lie? Okay? So we got to get down a level. We're past third grade civics. We're trying to get down a level about how do you know the con is on? We just listened to AOC have a very interesting exchange with a Republican lawyer about the fact that women who have miscarriages in states that Donald Trump enabled to outlaw abortion may lose their health care coverage because they have a miscarriage. That's what that was, okay? Here's the second element. I'm just going to read from a recent decision where a court found what the Trump administration was doing to dismantle the Department of Education to be illegal, okay? I'm going to read from the decision. The Trump administration acknowledges, as it must, that the Department of Education cannot be shut down without Congress's approval. Yet they simultaneously claim that their goal, obtaining congressional approval to shut down the department, that goal is distinct from their administrative goal, improving efficiency. But there is nothing in the record to support these contradictory positions. Not only is there no evidence that the Trump administration is pursuing a legislative goal or otherwise working with Congress to reach a resolution, but there's also no evidence that the mass firings actually made the department more efficient. In fact, the record is replete with evidence of the opposite. Okay, that's the next one. Here's the third thing. When you look at the big, brutal bill, and kudos to one of our incredibly terrific listeners that cued me into this, they asked, hey, when will the Medicare cuts take hold? When will the Medicaid cuts take hold? When will the ACA costs go up? When will the SNAP benefits run out? And you look at the timing of a lot of this stuff, guess when the worst of it will finally settle in? Would it shock anyone to know that it's probably 2028? 2028, 2029, you know, when it's highly likely that a Democrat will be president again. Here is the third thing. This is sound from Russell Vogt talking about what the actual point is. Let me know when you've got it. There it is. Jacob has got it. Take a listen here to what Russell Vogt said to a pro-Trump hack back in 2023. Listen carefully.
We want the bureaucrats to be traumatically affected. We want, when they wake up in the morning, we want them to not want to go to work because they are increasingly viewed as the villains. We want their funding to be shut down so that the EPA can't do all of the rules against our energy industry because they have no bandwidth financially to do so. We want to put them in trauma.
Okay. So those are a few of my little tidbits about how you know the con is on. We're going to go to Jim Santel in just a second, but we've got Andy from West Dallas. I love it. We just had on a small business owner from West Dallas. Hi, Andy from West Dallas. Say hi to Jim. How do you know when a politician is conning you?
I think you know when their argument changes depending on who's in power. So when one group says, oh, you need to be fiscally responsible, when they're trying to spend money on different things, but if it gets flipped around and they want to spend money on their stuff, then they don't say anything about being fiscally responsible. So one where I think both sides, we see it, no doubt in my mind.
And it's inconsistency in the moment, isn't it? It's that notion that yesterday I tell you something that's different when I say today. And we're not talking here, Andy, about someone whose views change over time. That we embrace, that we understand, right? It's that overt inconsistency that's so problematic and so revelatory, again, of when you're being conned.
Yeah, and it's insulting to us because we're not stupid.
Right.
Yes.
And isn't that the cynical part of it too, Andy? The notion they think that you'll believe this, right? They think you hook, line, and sinker. It's really incredibly cynical because it's premised upon the notion that you are stupid and you're not able to analyze arguments and do what we're doing right here, right now.
Thanks so much, Andy from West Dallas. New caller. If you are a new caller, you go to the top of the caller list, 855-752-4842. So, Jim, wondering what you, if you can sort of get inside my head and tell me what you were hearing in these various bits of things that I was sharing with you, which is a little bit of a gimme. Gotcha question, maybe. Right. Not a gimme, a gotcha.
Right. And there's a lot to unpack there. But I think one of the things, of course, that animates so much of this, again, going back to the AOC exchange in particular, is that notion that I won't simply say yes or no. There are times when questions can, in fact, admit of a yes or no answer. Yep. This is a fellow who's got it right in front of him. It's kind of like Elizabeth Warren also taking her witness through the basic language. It is, you and I know this so well. Sometimes it's best simply to say yes or no, even though that may not be helpful to your position, and then explain why it is your particular policy decision makes better sense. When somebody will not answer the question, they will not acknowledge a basic definition, and they will, again, we can talk about vacillation going back and forth. That, I think, is a big indicator to me that they're trying to pull the wool out of your eyes.
That is definitely one of the things I wanted to just in a brief moment talk with Andy and respond to Andy's thing about sort of depending on if your team is winning and the one spending money versus if your team is the one that's not spending money. So I have never been a deficit hawk, meaning I am not one that over most of my life has been very concerned about the federal deficit. The reasons for that are many, but in short, the U.S. has always been obviously, evidently, and in perpetuity, the world's reserve currency, which meant people will always buy U.S. Treasury bonds, which means we will always have a massive hand in crafting the global economy, and we can help preserve and protect our economy through good interest rate policy. That's under threat. The second reason I've not been a deficit hawk is that a governmental deficit when you are the world's reserve currency ain't like having credit card debt. And we had, up until the first Trump administration, frankly, deficits that were manageable in the scope of what our GDP growth was going to be. But what you see in Trump 1 plus what we are going to see in Trump 2 has now leapfrogged in scale and exploded the deficit many, many times.
Cataclysmically.
Correct. So to Andy's point, I never was one that was talking about deficits, but oh, this big spending Democrats. I was like, yes, it should be more efficient. Yes, it should be more effective. Yes, we should root out fraud, waste, and abuse. All of those things. But when it comes to spending on social policies and making sure that people don't fall through the cracks and that we actually observe the dignity of all Americans and help lift people up and not place our boot on their neck, the deficit was never a good reason to me to not do the right thing by Americans.
Because government has a fundamentally different purpose and mission.
It's not a profit-making enterprise.
It's not a profit-making
enterprise. It's a money-spending enterprise.
Right?
Yes.
And it is for the purpose of serving the American population.
So that never... But now I talk about the deficit because of the things that... Because the circumstances have changed. So to Andy's point, I'm going to say, when people seemingly change position, if you cannot, and this is kind of the point you were making, Jim, if you ask them, why are you talking about this now? And they cannot easily and off the top of their head say, well, these are the facts that have changed. This is why this is different.
Something has evolved.
And that is why my opinion on this has evolved or why I'm talking about it differently. That's when you know a con is on. I'm going to break down Maggie's other indicia of the political con. I don't know, sharpen your pencils. It might be worthy of taking a note because all of the hallmarks of the political con are there. We just need to open our eyes, take off the horse blinders and the rose-colored glasses and see them for what they are. The con is on, and I continue to break it down with Jim Santel and how you can be a better consumer of politics when we come back on the other side. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, Jim Santel, my good friend and yours, has been here with me the whole show. Thank you so much, Jim, for sticking
I'm
around.
I'm always delighted.
I love hanging out with you. I hope everybody else enjoys hanging out with Jim and I. You can find him here on The Maggie Dawn Show, sometimes on Tuesdays, sometimes on Fridays. Depends on the week. We've been talking about how to tell that you're getting conned by a politician. And one of the things is, very basically, that if the politician's position on a given issue changes, they really can't cogently explain to you in under a minute why, or say under 5 minutes, why. They cannot point to the facts on the ground or the circumstances or the framework or why it's changed. Here's the other thing. So going back to the items that I shared with Jim in the last block, if you missed any of that, go check it out at civicmedia.us or anywhere you find podcasts for the Maggie Dawn Show. Check it out. Spotify, Apple Pods, etc. You can listen to that. But what I played first was this exchange between AOC and a Republican lawyer talking about the big, brutal bill and the fact that women who have miscarriages in states that have made abortion illegal after Donald Trump stacked the Supreme Court with anti-choice zealots, they may lose their Medicaid because they have a miscarriage, okay? And what you heard from the Republican lawyer was the failure to simply say that the big, brutal bill does not protect, does not prohibit states from kicking women off of Medicaid if they have a miscarriage, okay? He wouldn't say it. Whenever a politician or someone who works for politicians like this Republican lawyer, when they won't say the thing that is obvious and evident and plain to everyone if you live on Earth, one, they just won't admit what is clearly in the bill's text or the clear result of the bill, that is when the con is on. So why wouldn't he say that? Because it sounds unconscionable. It sounds cruel to say.
Right.
Women who have a miscarriage and experience this trauma are going to be kicked off Medicaid. But that's the reality. If you won't deal with reality, that's the problem. Derek Van Orten, you're a liar, right? You're a liar. Tony Weed, you're a liar. Mike Johnson, you're a liar. Why are you a liar? Because you keep telling people they won't be kicked off of Medicaid if they're eligible, and that's a lie. There will be millions of Americans eligible for Medicaid who will lose their life-saving health insurance.
And what that does when they refuse to do that, it prevents us from having that underlying discussion, right?
Which Correct.
which is the humanity piece. And the fellow who's talking,
because they can't win on the humanity
exactly,
piece. You're
right?
acting in an
right?
inhuman way.
Right?
Which brings me to point two. I read from this court decision. When they're telling you it's about efficiency, and a neutral arbiter, like, I don't know, the Congressional Budget Office, a Republican-appointed federal court judge, says, no, it's not about efficiency. You're trying to hurt the department. You're trying to dismantle government. That's what you're doing. It has nothing to... A neutral arbiter says that, and it's then what? Backed up by the admission, caught on tape, of Russell Vogt saying, yeah, we want to make government workers not want to come to work. We want them to not be able to enforce the regulations that have been promulgated. We want them to not be able to do their congressionally assigned tasks. When they say the quiet part out loud, Joni Ernst, that's when you know, like, if you are, well, is it really about this efficiency business? They keep talking. They keep telling me that nobody's going to. Oh, but over here, they actually said that when they were talking to friendlies. That's when you know. Everything that they're saying about the efficiency and everything else, that's the con. Because the facts are the facts, results aren't rhetoric, and they went and said what their actual intent was. This is like, for example, Republicans who have said for the last 25 years that we'll talk about voter fraud, but when we get in closed-door meetings, what they'll say is, oh, there's no voter fraud. There's no problem with that.
We know that.
We just want to keep those old people, students, and black folks from voting. They have said it.
And that's and to their credit, that's honest. That is what they want
that
to do,
is
right?
Honest.
That's the honesty. And when the federal judge talking about the dismantling of the Department of Education provides this nonpartisan, fair exposition, and the judge says, you know what, on the record, in the public domain, there is nothing to support this statement that you're making to justify the ugly part, that's when you know that the fraud is on. That's when you know the con is apace.
The second, or the third thing, what, however many things we're at right now, look to the timing of things. If you are so proud of this legislative accomplishment, then why is the timing of the implementation of the legislative accomplishment not for years? If it's such a great thing and you have no... The timing game is a thing for Republicans. The last thing I want to point you to is look, and this brings us back to where we began today, Jim, is look to the intellectual rigor, credibility,
yes,
and trustworthiness of the people that are surrounding that elected official. Mm-hmm. Regardless of whether or not they're your team or someone else's team, I might think Bill Barr is not a good man. But what I do not believe is that Bill Barr would say yes to a president who proposed to do something clearly illegal. I don't believe that about the man. I don't think he's a good man. I think he found a lot of gray area where there might not have
wrote a lot of letters that misconstrued reports, for example, but
these were serious people. When you see a politician surrounded by clowns, criminals, and the incompetent, you know that you're getting conned, because all that politician wants is to look good by comparison and to control those around him. This has been Jim and Maggie doing How to
what
Know the
delight.
Political Con.
Great information, great education this afternoon, as always.
I'll be back tomorrow. We got a great show planned for you. My name is Maggie Nguyen. That's Jim Santel, former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together against the political con.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.